Hey, thanks Dave Slade for the intro, and welcome back to the Baseball America College Podcast. We're down one on today's funky, fresh college crew. Mike Lanana out ill, but Ted Cahill and Jim Schoner joining me, John Manuel, here at Baseball America. Guys, obviously, busy weekend of college baseball. We're kind of into this home stretch now that the calendar has turned to May. Things get serious, it seems like, when the NFL draft is gone and the calendar turns to May. And things definitely serious at the top of the Big 12 conference, guys. That's a good place as any to start on this week's top 25 rankings and how we looked at it. And one of the biggest movers, which was Texas Tech. And guys, it feels like the further away we get from the Houston College Classic, Teddy, you were there for that one. You saw peak TCU. I guess to sound like Bill Kristol, he was all about peak Trump. now, he got it wrong. Did we see peak TCU in Houston? Because it feels like the Horned Frogs since then have had chances to make a statement. They had their latest chance this weekend against Texas Tech. Instead, it was the Red Raiders making that statement. The Texas Tech kind of seized control of the Big 12 this weekend if they didn't already have it.
Yeah, TCU hosted that series, and they came in second place. And if they had a chance to leave in first place, or at least have cut the gap to a game if they had just gone 2-1. But instead, Texas Tech takes the series, wins a tight one on Sunday, came down to the final out. TCU had the tying run and scoring position. Wasn't quite able to push it across. So Texas Tech now pretty well in control in first place. And you know, TCU now is in third place in the Big 12 behind Oklahoma State. They've lost to those two teams the last 2 weeks. It was in Stillwater. They played Oklahoma State, and they went 1-2 up there. So, you know, they have had a chance the last 2 weeks. The Big 12 was there for the taking for them. And now it looks like they're not going to win the Big 12 regular season. They're still in fine shape overall.
Do you think they're the third best team in that league? I mean, at some point you are who your record says you are.
No, I don't know who's. Texas Tech looks like the best team in the league for sure. They swept Oklahoma State. They beat TCU in Fort Worth. I mean, that certainly looks like the best team. I don't know about between Oklahoma State and TCU. Oklahoma State has been playing a lot better of late. They started not so great. Even if you get outside the first two weekends, they still didn't. It took them a little while to get things going. But TCU, I don't know if Houston might be the peak for them. But also, you know, when I talked to Jim Schlossnagel last week, he said he felt like their best baseball was in front of them, and I think there's reason to believe that that's true. Lucan Baker did not pitch this weekend. He's hitting. He's not pitching right now. He's week to week. With an injury that keeps him off the mound.
They're certainly not full strength.
Right, and Mitchell Traver, though, comes back this Sunday, as long as everything goes well this week. He's slated to make his first appearance of the season, and he'll be on a pretty tight pitch count this week, but with the hope that they can have him build him up, and he'll be full strength by the time Memorial Day comes around. And if that happens, that'd be huge for TCU. Mitchell Traver was supposed to be their opening day starter before he went down with his injury, so if they can get those two guys back, I think they're in fine shape. To potentially be playing at their peak at the right time, which would be in June.
Jim, just going to talk a little bit about the Red Raiders, because I do, in essence, I agree with Teddy. Like I think TCU is going to get better as they get healthier. But Texas Tech, they did take advantage of this opportunity. It sounds like just the talking to other coaches about them who've seen them this year, you know, they have speed, they have power, it's an older offense, they have several veterans from their 2014 College World Series trip. It's really been the offense, and they're a little iffy on defense, but they've had these young arms who've kind of come through for them. Is that how you see how they've vaulted themselves at the top of the Big 12?
I mean, so the lineup is what jumps out, just the way they do it, and it's actually some of their older guys that actually kind of struggled. They've had some newer faces that have stepped up too, but yeah, and we've talked about them, about the young pitching they've had. But to go on the road and beat TCU, like you guys were saying, that's a place that not many visiting teams can go in and win. And they're two games up in the standings. They've beaten both of their competitors there with Oak State and TCU. So, I mean, they're in great shape to be a national seed and to play at home in Lubbock, where they always have great crowds and a great home field advantage. I mean, I mean, it's all there for the taking for them to, you know, to get back to Omaha for the second time in 3 years.
One thing about you know, where they are now in the standings is that this is a program that has only ever won the Big 12 regular season title once in its history, and it only has two regular season conference championships. Even if you go back to the old Southwest Conference, yeah, they only have one of those too.
We're talking 20 years now. Big 12. This is the 20th year, yeah, of the Big 12. So there's a lot of history there.
I mean, it's been since '97 since they won a regular season title, and not, I think it was '98 they won the tournament. So they haven't won a Big 12 title of any kind in a really long time, and I mean, they're in a great position to do it. The magic number is 5 right now. They have 6 games in the conference left. So I mean, they'll if they can do it, it would be a great story. Tim Tadlock has done a great job with them, and you know, they did make Omaha 2 years ago, but last year was a little disappointing, missing out on the tournament, and they've come back with
very high expectations coming into the year.
Yes, but they've flushed that, and this team is playing really well right now.
Yeah, it just really feels like, you know, I just would have thought, like, coming into the year, looking at their roster, I would have thought Ryan Mosley would have pitched important innings. He's not even a factor in the Big 12 anymore. It has been new faces. Ty Dameron with his first start in league play on Sunday in a rubber match on the road. And he didn't pitch great, but he pitched well enough for his team to win. He competed, obviously. I mean, so you see veteran names. You see familiar names like Eric Gutierrez and Nesloni. I guess I never know how to pronounce his last name. Forgive me for not knowing how to pronounce Tyler Nesloni's last name. That's how it looks.
I think that's it.
You got it.
But they've got, you know, they've got power up and down this lineup. So it's really been it's a neat story. And again, they've played a couple West Coast schools where I'm doing my draft calls, and everyone who's seen Texas Tech that I've talked to, very impressed with the approach their team takes. And that was a loud series win this weekend. Oklahoma State less loud, but still winnings 2 of 3 against Texas.
So no, they swept Texas.
Thank you.
And that is, I mean,
and Texas have been hot. They just came from beating Texas Tech last weekend.
And Oak State goes into Austin and sweeps a series, which is their third road Big 12 sweep of the year. I mean, that's a team that is playing well on the road, and some of those sweeps are not against premier competition in the Big 12, but it's not easy to go on the road and sweep in conference, and that's something that Oklahoma State had never done in the Big 12 era before.
It's the first time that Texas has been swept this year as well, which, you know, in conference in play, conference, which, you know, they've been very competitive in the conference. And does this put a nail in the coffin for UT? I mean, they were under 500 coming in, but they were 9-6 in the conference coming into the weekend, Jimmer, before getting swept. I mean, is this kind of the end for Texas this year?
I have to see what the RPI is, but I mean, certainly as an if they're hovering around 500, I mean, 9-6 would have been, you know, okay. But
if they are sub 100, it's over. I mean, they're in the position they were in last year. I feel like they've been in that for a little bit now, where it's a matter of going to the Big 12 tournament and needing to win it.
I just felt like beating Texas Tech has started to, like, yeah, if they'd had a third place regular season finish in the Big 12. So the Big 12, we have these three top teams, and Texas Tech, TCU, Oklahoma State, all three of those teams have been ranked at one time or another this season.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a fourth team that's going to make it, Jim, or is there a fourth at large?
Large, no.
Feels like this is a three-bid league. I just was on the radio in Omaha this morning, and they asked me, you know, a friend of the program, Damon Benning, asked, like, so, you know, we thought Nebraska going to the Big Ten and be able to dominate the Big Ten. And I said, well, you know, the thing is, you didn't know you were going from the Big 12 to a stronger conference. But the Big 10, year in and year out, feels like it's competitive with the Big 12. And this year, I feel like it's better.
Well, I think part of that is that the Big 12 is sitting on 9 teams right now, and the Big 10 has 13. And that makes a huge difference because, I mean, maybe some if you paired the SEC down to 9 teams, it would still be the SEC. But the Big 12, the way it's gone, when you take A&M out of it especially, they're left with five or six teams that historically are really good, and then a few teams that are not. And so the Big 12, to me right now, the basement is killing it. When you look at their RPI, like that's the problem, is that they have anchors.
Adding TCU has kind of helped make up for losing A&M. But to
losing
me, it's
Mizzou.
The fact, missing, and then like, but Texas and OU being down is what's really killing it, I think.
But if you put A&M into it, then you have four, like, top 15 teams most
even
years.
This year. But I tend to agree with Jimmer that it's the same thing with the Pac-12. You can't be a good Pac-12 year if UCLA and USC both stink.
Yeah.
You just can't. It just historically, it would be so difficult to expect the northern schools in that league to carry it. And the flagship franchises of the Big 12 are Texas and Oklahoma. And we thought Oklahoma would be good this year. We weren't as high on the Longhorns, but we weren't the only ones who thought Oklahoma would be good. And both those programs, especially from a both those teams are down. I shouldn't say programs. Texas just went to Omaha recently, but even that was a surprise. When's the last time Oklahoma went? 2010?
Yeah.
And it was their last Omaha trip.
Texas. And they won a regional 2 or 3 years ago.
Which was the last time they were in the tournament.
Yeah.
So it's been a little bit slower transition in the PQ's era. And, you know, that was a I really like Coach Hughes. I thought he did a great job at Virginia Tech. But he's from Boston, you know. He's from Boston. He was a BC with the Davidson. He coached at Virginia Tech. That's a – I just remember that struck me as a very strange hire at the time. It was I don't know how set up for success Pete Hughes was to go across the country to Oklahoma and replace a guy, for better or for worse, for all his warts. Sonny Galloway knew that area. He had been an assistant in Oklahoma. Then he was a head coach at Oral Roberts. Then back to Oklahoma as the head coach. That's just that's a tough one. I feel like you have to know Oklahoma and Texas to win at Oklahoma. Yeah. And, you know, Pete Hughes, he's got some talent in there. They had more players drafted than any other program last year. That's a hard job. It's hard to win in the Big 12 right now because it's the fourth out of four of these, you know, old BCS leagues. Right now, I'd rather play in the Big 10. I don't know about you guys, but I feel like the Big 10's stronger. And we had a big matchup in the Big 12, Big 10 this weekend, Michigan State. Jimmer, you can go off my point of the Big 12 if you want to. Obviously, Teddy, you can too. But I don't know what you guys thought of the Big 10 results this weekend. We wound up with two Big 10 teams ranked this week with the showdown that was there in Ann Arbor. That was in Ann Arbor, correct?
It was in both.
Oh, they split it.
They did one of those? Okay, yeah. I kind of like this series. I've been to one of those. I've been to a Baylor Texas A&M series that was split back in the day. So it's fun. We don't do that in ACC country that I know of. Any of the teams here do that?
No, I don't know why Duke and Carolina and North Carolina State, and Wake for that matter, can't handle that.
I-40 traffic is probably your number one reason. It's probably, what's the word that starts with an I? I can't even think of it. With something, objects in motion, inertia. Can't think of inertia. Inertia is probably number one. This is already in motion. Yeah. But number two is probably I-40 traffic. But this kind of split home series, Michigan State comes out on top of this one, and the Big Ten series, the Big Ten standings are very tight at the top, guys, and it still seems like Minnesota's, they're still in first place. Are they still the favorite to win this as it is right now?
Well, I mean, they've got Indiana, which is in second place, coming in this weekend, and I guess because that's in Minneapolis, you would have to favor the Gophers.
Both Minnesota and Indiana have already played their six wins against Purdue and Northwestern, which are... you talk about bottom feeders. Those two teams this year are two of the worst, probably the two worst teams, I'd say, in these power conferences. Is there a worse team in a power conference than Northwestern or Purdue? And those two teams, I think, have combined for 10 wins.
Yeah, those two teams are rough.
It's like Wazoo is probably your
Wazoo,
only.
But Wazoo beat Oregon State.
Exactly. So which Michigan State is in third place in the Big Ten, and they have not played Northwestern. They did play Purdue. They don't have Northwestern on their schedule, so I believe that's a hindrance to the Spartans' chances of winning the regular season.
Yeah, they're only a game and a half out right now, so depending on how this this weekend in Minneapolis breaks, you know, we'll see where things go. I think Michigan State's closing schedule is not the easiest. They've got Maryland, they've got Nebraska, and they've got Iowa, who are all solid teams there in the Big Ten. And so it'll be interesting to see how they navigate that. But you know, Minnesota having already beaten Michigan, you know, having Indiana at home this weekend, I mean, they're looking like they're in pretty good shape there.
Yeah, and it kind of struck me about with Michigan how their resume is actually kind of thin. I mean, they lost head to head to Minnesota, now they lose to Michigan State, and they really, other than I believe they swept Nebraska, but other than that, they really haven't done anything especially loud like over the course of the year. So I mean, their RPI is still good. Their RPI is still better than Michigan State's, but which is kind of surprising.
Right.
But the Spartans feel like they've been pretty consistent, and that's, you know, so obviously there it shows, you know, we get them back in the top 25 for the second time in 3 weeks.
That was going to be my question, Jim, is we're talking about the Big 12 as a three-bid league, and I feel like those are three very secure bids. The Big Ten, it feels like it could be a little squishier because Indiana's in second place. They've certainly had a nice run here in the league, but their RPI is north of 100. You know, Michigan State's RPI is a little low. Michigan, as you said, their resume is just okay. It feels like they're, what, five top 75 RPIs in that league, but it feels like this could be a league that could be a two-bid league. It could be a three- or four-bid league, I guess, if things break right. I mean, is that a fair read of the Big Ten?
Yeah,
right
I think that's right. I mean, it's got the you know, Maryland's kind of been going back and forth every week. They just
requisite Maryland reference from Jim Schroeder.
They beat Penn State. They took two out of three at Penn State this weekend, who'd been pretty solid. But yeah, I mean, so they've been kind of back and forth, you know, each week on the whether I have them in or not. And then yeah, you got Minnesota, Michigan State, Terps. So four. Three of those four will probably get it, if possibly all four.
I mean, the way I see it, Minnesota and Michigan, if they just take care of business at this point, they're in pretty solid shape. I mean, they've top 30 RPIs. They both, you know, Minnesota at 25-13 doesn't quite have, like, Michigan's overall record is better. Michigan probably has some better non-conference stuff than Minnesota did. But you know, I think both of them are pretty safe right now, and it's just going to be a matter of can Michigan State hang in there with its RPI, or can Maryland get its RPI back up, and can Indiana do what Michigan did last year, which is you know, have a pretty poor start to the season but recover and then go win in the Big Ten tournament.
One other thing about Maryland, as you mentioned, it just has been such an up and down season for Mike Schwarn. I think his draft stock has taken a hit. I know I talked to a scout early who really like the changeup, still like the slider, but the fastball command and velocity have been erratic this year. He became what their all-time strikeouts leader this weekend. So, I mean, clearly he's had a decorated career, even if he hasn't had a great junior season. It's just hard to see. I mean, he's just almost like analogous to like a Shane Comine from days of yore. This is the guy who made Nebraska's baseball program pretty much by himself, really started things. It was Dave Van Horn's number one important recruit was to get a Friday starter for what turned out to be 4 years for Comine. Schwarn just feels like he's that kind of guy. I hope he's not there for 4 years. I hope if he wants to sign this year, he gets drafted high enough and signs. But it's amazing to me in some ways that Maryland is still in this discussion when the unicorn has not had his the kind of year that they expected him to have. So I know he's been good, but in past the last 2 years, he's been great.
Right. I mean, they did drop him off Friday at one
point. Yeah. Right. No, he was back in that role this weekend.
Only because of injury, really.
He didn't really earn his way back there, but he may earn his way into staying there. Although
he pitched well, and you know, I mean, they need him to. They need him. They're. I mean, they don't need him to be what he was last year necessarily, but they do need him.
And that's what Coach Sheff said here in the press release. It was important for him and for our team. I mean, those two things have been inextricably linked the last 2 years. But this is a team that's won regionals each of the last 2 years. On the road, this is and now it's a team that's on the verge of not even making it to regional play. So that was a big win for him, a big win for Maryland. The other, I guess, that we have to talk about on the podcast every week is the top of the rankings are dominated still by Southeastern Conference teams. Teddy, you were in Columbia. Let's talk a little bit about that. They played 2 1/3 games in Columbia this weekend. Florida with a dramatic come-from-behind victory on Friday night with 2 solo homers off Josh Regan in the 9th inning. It's Reagan, right? Josh Regan. Jonathan India's home run was shocking in a way because that was not a pitch that looked like it was going to be driven out of the park.
Well, and so, he's not a guy that...
had a second home run of the year?
Yeah, and even when he was in high school, you know, when you talk to guys, you know, power was not a thing that Jonathan India got talked about. I mean, I went back and I looked at all my notes on Jonathan India, which are copious from last year's draft.
He was a guy.
And yeah, he was Florida's top position player recruit in this class, and I feel like sometimes he gets lost a little bit because they have so many arms, and you know, because of everything that they have at Florida. But he's having a really nice year. I mean, he was their third leading hitter. But home runs are not, he's not a power hitter. He's a contact guy. He's a line drive guy, and you know, but he got a hold of that one, and it went out pretty good. And that was a huge home run. That was the one that tied the game. The Nick Horvath. Which was even more surprising.
Right.
I mean, Nick Horvath is he's a two-way player, and when he does play positions, mostly he's a defensive replacement or a pinch runner, which is how he entered the game. But they left him in, and Sully left him in to take that at-bat, and He gets rewarded with a game-winning home run.
That was, and the place just fell silent. You know, that was a raucous crowd. It's as often is the case at the artist formerly known as Carolina Stadium. What is it now? Founders Park.
Founders Park.
Founders Park. Couldn't remember the corporate title. But so that kind of a loss, pretty great win for South Carolina the next day to come back out and win the way they've won. Gene Cone with a hit, a key hit, and a pitching staff that does its job. A pitching staff that's been fantastic. You know, Clark Schmidt was good Friday. I think Webb was even a bit better the next day.
Yeah, Brandon Webb definitely stepped up in a big way. They were. I know Chad Holbrook was curious to see how his team would respond to the way they lost on Friday night. I mean, that's not easy. Feeling like you have a game won against...
Feeling like you outplayed your opponent.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, you when they've handed a lead to Josh Reagan this year, usually they walk off the field with a victory. So, you know, that was... It could have been very demoralizing, but they responded well. And, you know, you have to, against Florida, you have to be there fully mentally because of all the talent that's there. You can't show up at the park and not be fully invested. So South Carolina came out facing a really tough matchup in A.J. Puck. And
he threw well.
Yeah. Puck struck out 10 guys.
I don't know if it was peak Puck, but it was – that's just fun to say. But that was close to peak Puck.
Yeah. I mean, that was everything you want from A.J. Puck, really. And Braden Webb matched it, basically. I mean, he went out there, and then Tyler Johnson came in and got some huge outs. And you know, South Carolina is able to get away with a 2-1 win.
I don't know how many times you guys have gotten this tweet this year. I'm sure you have. How many tweets have you gotten about Josh Reagan versus Tyler Johnson from Gamecocks fans? It seems like it was accelerated. It was so much this weekend that I got some of those. But I got to guess that both of you guys have gotten that this year.
I mean, it's an interesting discussion. Johnson is by far the better prospect. He
right.
looks more like a closer. You know, he's out there throwing really hard fastballs in the mid-90s, and Josh Reagan is a...
Is not.
he's out of the Michael Roth mold, basically. But
he's like a Beastie Boys closer. He's crafty.
Yes. I mean, that's something that South Carolina has a lot of success with, though. So, you know, they stuck with Johnson on Saturday. And that was something that, you know, Holbrook talked about. He just felt like he played his gut there. He liked the way Johnson had thrown in the eighth. And, you know, it would be interesting to see how they manage that going forward. But I think the good thing for the Gamecocks is they have two guys there that they can rely on, which is good because their bullpen does not have the depth that Florida's has. So if they can have two kind of elite guys, you know, that's big for them. Because at some point, I mean, if they played Sunday, Johnson was pretty much going to be unavailable.
Certainly nobody has the depth that Florida really has. I mean, that's what makes Florida Florida, Jimmer. But both those teams, I guess the thing is, by losing that third game and no one loses that series, those teams are both really in the driver's seat for top eight, for national seeds, aren't
they? Yeah, I mean, pretty much this whole position. I mean, South Carolina's still in first place by a game, you know, technically in the SEC East. So, I mean, I don't know what the rest of their schedule looks like. I'm sure, although I know they'll still play A&M, so that'll be a big series.
It's not easy for either one of them.
But, I mean, I mean, I already had both of them as national seeds, and this doesn't really change that. I probably wouldn't have changed even if the series had been finished, honestly, but... Yeah, got those two in A&M. I mean, Mississippi State, we have number three in the rankings. The way things are playing out, there very well could be four from one conference, whether it's the ACC or SEC. They're just not, with Coastal Carolina getting swept, there's just not too many other options. So we might well be heading in that direction.
You're talking about for the national
seeds? Top eight
seeds.
National seeds, yeah.
And that's kind of where I was going to go. I mean, obviously Mississippi State did what it needed to do. That seems like a rough weekend for Alabama's at-large hopes as well, right?
Yeah,
how often do SEC teams with RPIs in the 40s and north get at-large bids?
Yeah, if you get outside the 40s, you're in trouble.
And that's where Alabama is.
Yeah, they need to pick it up.
For national seed hosting, though, UCSB has creeped back into the top 10. And because Cal Poly lost this weekend...
Spit the bid, I believe, is the fair way to say that.
I mean, they got swept by Long Beach. I mean, the Big West is now bunched up all again.
Yeah, that could go any number. I mean, I think they're still a game behind Fullerton.
Yeah, Fullerton is still in first place.
Yeah, so, I mean, but yeah, UCSB, that's... I mean, if they did finish in second, they aren't going to give it to a second place team.
Right. I mean, they do have to win the Big West.
But, I mean, yeah, the RPI is there.
The
ballpark is not.
That's a problem.
That's a whole nother topic.
It is
that's a messy one to deal with.
But they are the only non-SEC ACC team in the, except for Texas Tech,
yeah,
in
the top 16, I think.
Coastal fell to 17. Yeah. So yeah,
that's damning. That really is. I mean, that's just damning. Yeah.
And Southern Miss loses at Florida Atlantic, and if they had won that series, they'd be better off in the RPI and in control of Conference USA, and instead they're not.
Yeah.
You could have three regionals in the Magnolia State, which would, because Ole Miss did what it needed to do. That's another series I wanted to talk about here, guys. Was, you know, Ole Miss got off to a tremendous start this year. They had a very difficult schedule to start SEC play. They hit it like a roadblock, and it really, you know, especially when they got swept at home by South Carolina, that was really like a game changing kind of series. It really announced that South Carolina, after a very weak pre conference schedule, with the exception of the Clemson series, which it lost. But that's really where South Carolina announced what it was all about this year. Ole Miss has kind of been a little bit more under the radar since then. But this weekend, taking care of business against LSU, feels like that really kind of puts Ole Miss much more in control to host a regional. And LSU, I don't see what's on their resume to be a regional host, besides Alex Box Stadium is huge and lots of Tiger fans go there.
Yeah, they beat Vanderbilt 2 out of 3 at home. That's pretty much – that's the beginning and end of their marquee wins.
Because this team has struggled defensively. It has this new identity offensively that still feels like it's a little inconsistent offensively. It just doesn't feel like LSU. I guess, Teddy, do you think either of these teams has a claim to being a great team, or are they just both pretty good teams this year?
You know, I think Ole Miss has got a bad rap. I think that team is really good. I don't know about great. But they beat Louisville, remember? They have some pretty good SEC series wins. I don't know that their rotation is what I would really call, to be a great team. I don't know that they have the pitching for that, but they hit with their offense is really good there with Colby Bortles. JB Woodman went off this weekend. Tate Blackman has fully recovered from last year's disappointment.
I'll tell you what JB Woodman also does. He throws like crazy. Yeah, to watch.
He had 4 outfield assists this weekend, all at the plate, or 3.
He's very fun to watch throw. I'm not sure that I'm surprised the scouting report hasn't gotten out to not run on him, but he's fun to watch throw.
Yeah, you would think that they would know, and I'm sure they do know, but he threw out 3 runners at the plate this weekend, and he hit 3 home runs, threw out 3 runners at the plate. Like, I mean, he had a huge series for them, and that was he got some critical outs for them, and obviously provides some critical offense. So I mean, when they get going offensively, I mean, they're pretty tough, and they have like overall pitching. They just maybe don't have the studs that some of these other guys have.
And again, LSU hit this weekend. They have some offense, and the thing is, it just maybe in some other years, maybe this year with how weak the rest of the country is. Maybe there's still a shot for LSU to be a regional host. They still have time, obviously, on their schedule, too.
Yeah, I mean, when you have 3 SEC series left, you pretty much have chances to add the marquee wins. I mean, they play Florida at the end of the year. So, I mean, there's one chance right there. They get them in the box. So, it'll be interesting to see where LSU lands, how many hosts the SEC gets. Obviously plays a factor in that.
I'd still be surprised if it's more than 5.
Well, yeah, it would be, but I did see Paul Maneri out there making a case for 6.
That's what I'm saying. That's why, because he knows he's 6.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see.
The other SEC series I wanted to mention and bring up was Kentucky guys going to Auburn. I guess to their credit, they avoided the sweep. Is Kentucky there? They don't have to worry about anything here, do they, Jimmer, as far as at-large bid? Because it doesn't feel like Kentucky's played great.
They're into the 40s, too.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of wandering in the wrong direction. I mean, as long as you finish close to 5, if they get to 14 wins, they should be fine in the conference. And like, if you're in the 14 wins and you're in the 40s, you'll probably be okay.
Got to give it up to Kyle Cody also this weekend for his team losing the first 2 games. And being a senior when his team needed him the most, and pitching one of his better games in SEC play, pitching into the 8th inning, protecting a lead. By the time that he came out, it was an 8-1 or 9-1 lead, and gave up a couple runs late. But that was a big start for Kyle Cody. Just to get back to Kentucky's overall chances, They're certainly, they're still they're just scuffling a little bit, it feels like, at this time of the year. And it doesn't feel like they've really, it's the wrong time of year to be struggling a bit.
They needed to get healthy this weekend against Auburn.
Right.
Because
it's a team with 5 wins in the SEC.
And they get South Carolina this weekend.
That's not going to help. Maybe they get Javon Shelby hot. He hit 2 home runs on Sunday. Shelby's had power all year, but he came into the weekend hitting below 220, if memory serves. So, just feels like that the SEC has 7 teams that are outstanding, 6-7 teams that are really strong that can knock each other off. There's some separation amongst those teams now, but that's kind of squishier middle. We've talked about the bottom. I mean, Tennessee gets swept at home by Mizzou this weekend.
Yeah, there's a team that's out of it.
I mean, that's the opposite of what they needed after winning their series last weekend.
They just played themselves into your next 4 out.
Right.
And then they go out this week and lose to Alabama State at home. And then Missouri comes in and wins that series.
I tell you, and Nick Senzel looks so good playing shortstop. Watching, he had a lot of balls hit to him, especially on Sunday's game. So I just have my computer, my DVR set up to watch to catch any Tennessee games. And I try to speed through and watch a lot of Nick Senzel because he's the high draft guy. He's just so much better defensively than I was led to believe this spring. He's more agile. He comes in on the ball. He's got easy arm strength. He's playing really well. I can't remember the last time a guy like that, a guy who could be the first overall pick, is going to be. I don't think he'll be the first overall pick, but I think he'll go in the first 3 picks. He's not going to make the SEC tournament, not to mention the NCAA tournament. That's rough.
Yeah, they're dead last.
I mean, I know that there are, they're going to have to be opportunities in this. There are still opportunities in the schedule. But it's just stunning, Jim, that they're...
They about just have to win out, basically. I mean, they're 6-15.
Oof. That's really... That's not going to get it done, Mojo. And they've had, their best player has played well. Second home run of the game. He had 2 home runs of the game yesterday. It's not like he's not trying. It's not like he... But it's just stunning to see a guy who's that level of prospect in the SEC... And he's not going to probably play in the conference tournament. That's brutal. It's brutal. And then the other team in the SEC that's kind of on this bubble, still is Georgia.
Yeah.
They get swept by Vanderbilt. I mean, that's...
They're under 500 overall now. I mean,
I was about to say that, Jim, their RPI, last I checked, was higher than Kentucky's and higher than Alabama's, but their overall record now under 500, obviously, puts them in jeopardy.
Yeah, I mean, they had this just... brutal stretch of schedule where it's like all ranked teams.
And you wrote about it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. I mean, they were holding their own, and I think they were 7-9 or something during the stretch before this weekend. But now, they just go up into Nashville and just get smoked.
Started with that A&M sweep, and then they beat South Carolina, and then these last 2 weekends against Florida and Vanderbilt.
They avoided the sweep at Florida, so that was fine.
That's it. They had to find a way to sneak in a win. Again, kind of like Kentucky did, it's very different. But you had to figure out a way to sneak in a win. Don't get swept.
But, I mean, they do get swept, though, twice in this stretch, which was
A&M and Vanderbilt.
A&M and Vanderbilt.
There's no shame in that, necessarily. But to be a good team,
right.
You have to avoid that.
Yeah.
So, anyway, and speaking of sweeps and the state of Georgia, I guess that was other most surprising series of the weekend, guys. We ended up not ranking either of these teams, which kind of surprised me a little bit, but I think I fought against one of them. So I guess that part didn't surprise me. But Georgia Tech sweeping Coastal Carolina. Jim, just last week, Coastal was a national seed in Schoenerdology, correct?
Yep.
Talk about spitting the bit.
Yeah.
What happened?
They blew a big lead in the game 2 of that series. I think that really kind of set them back. I mean, because then they had a game suspended,
right?
And then they came back the next day, blew a lead, and ended up losing the final game. So I figure that probably had some carryover there. But yeah, I mean, they were up there in the RPI. They're dominating their conference, which they still are technically. But so that was, it's kind of just like you're looking for anybody, any non-ACC SEC team to be a national seed because you figure that's what the committee would do. But I mean, that's to get swept by, obviously a good ACC team, but not one of the elite ones, and to have it, happen at this stage of the year where it's going to be in, front of a lot of people's memories. I mean, that pretty much just, I just can't. I mean, their RPI is down to like 17 now, so they're still
right behind Georgia Tech at 16. And Georgia Tech had a
right in front of Georgia Tech.
Oh, right in front of Georgia Tech. Yeah. Texas 18. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
but
and they're certainly affected by weather significantly. But this is a team that is thought of as a very offensive team.
Yeah,
and they can.
And Georgia Tech's pitching has been a mess.
Exactly. This matchup should have favored Coastal Carolina. Yeah. I guess, Teddy, do you take more away on the positive side? We can let you go chat if you need to, but did you take more away on the positive side here for the Yellow Jackets or more or negative on the Chanticleer side?
Well, it's obviously a big positive for Georgia Tech. I mean, they're right back in the thick of the hosting discussion. They have Miami this weekend, which is another opportunity to they're going to have to carry that momentum. We'll see what happens in Atlanta. That the series is another home series for them, which is big. But I think, it's unfortunate that this is going to be the way it is for Coastal. But this
had a great April.
This looks like them getting exposed against a really good team, and you get. Anytime you have a mid-major do something like this, there's always the question of, well, could they do that week in and week out
right.
in the SEC, in the ACC, in the Big 12, in the Pac-12? And this weekend makes it look like no, Coastal couldn't. And that their gaudy record is a product of playing in the Big South, which is not having a good year. And I don't know whether how true that is, but that's certainly going to be the perception coming off of this. And, I mean, that's... It's really too bad for them. They were having a great year, and for this series to mean that, for it to go that way is just really unfortunate for them. But at the same time, you got to pitch better than that.
And the thing is, they had it lined up. They lose the first game, but on Saturday they have an eight. It's a slugfest early. They're down 5-2, but they go to Andrew Beckwith, one of their submarine guys.
Mm-hmm.
They're great with submarine guys. I forget their names, but I remember going to the big the Big South Tournament Championship game in High Point in 2012, the afternoon game that I went to.
I remember that, yeah.
Before the Rodon, Ben Moss showdown, the first Carolina NC State ACC Tournament showdown in Greensboro. And that was a great game. Liberty was a good team, and they got close to Coastal early, and Coastal went sub, out. Their submariners just totally shut the door. And Beckwith pitched great. Puts up five zeros. Starts running into trouble the ninth. They go to their closer, Mike Morrison, who's been outstanding all year. He couldn't close the door. Connor Justice with a big game-tying two-run homer. And then Matt Gonzalez gets the winning one. So it's not as they lost. They lost with the guys they wanted on the mound. And then on Sunday, they got to a deficit. Austin Kitchen, their freshman left-hander, pitched great out of the bullpen in a seven-inning game that followed on the after the resumption of play. So they lost with their guys on the mound. So that's the more distressing part, I got to think, for Coastal. My look at them in Chapel Hill was in person, I was impressed with their team. I wasn't blown away, but I was impressed. And this is, like you said, so it's too bad that this series, I think, is going to be magnified in that in that conference room when the committee meets later in the month.
Especially because, when you're looking at host sites in this region, the Carolinas, Virginia, and Georgia, last year there was nothing to be found. This year there are plenty of options with South Carolina, North Carolina State, Virginia's back in the mix, now Georgia Tech, and Coastal too. But, I mean, there are options where there weren't options last year, and that's not going to do them any favors.
Completely agree. And let's touch on a couple of those that you just mentioned also. Virginia puts itself back. I mean, they were already ranked. The Cavaliers were trending in the right direction. But to go on the road in the league and sweep a team is never easy, and especially when Pitt has TJ Zoik. But Connor Jones deals in that one, out-duels Zoik, and then Virginia goes on and sweeps the series. Pretty significant, obviously, for the Cavaliers. They seem like they're kind of cemented themselves in that fifth spot in the ACC behind however you want to rank them, Louisville, Florida State, NC State, Miami. That's the top four. Virginia kind of setting itself up as that fifth team. And it does seem like they're in contention to host a regional.
Yeah, I mean, certainly they're up to 16th in the RPI, but the entire conference is up there, basically.
Right.
It's almost like the RPI. You can't even use that anymore.
How high is North Carolina in the RPI?
They're still like
14,
yeah,
right?
They're 14.
But the thing about Virginia is they are now in second place in their division.
Right.
They have that series win against Miami. They are the defending champions, and they close pretty easily. They have this weekend off. They still have Virginia Tech, which might not help the RPI, but it'll help the record. And I don't remember.
Yeah, you better not lose a game in that series.
Right, right.
But I mean,
Tech is the other team.
Georgia Tech. So they have a pretty good chance to finish with a nice looking ACC record. Really pull themselves out of the middle of the pack.
And the other part of that is they're playing well. You know, not that the record's good. It feels like they're playing cleaner games. It feels like their scores are a little bit lower.
I mean, I said so many times that I trusted that staff to get it figured out by May. Did. Here it is, May. That staff has it figured out.
They do. I got to just say, I'll say again, I mean, Jim has heard me say this for 3 years, 2 years now at least, how much I like Adam Haseley. And I knew they were going to wind up having to use him as a pitcher. I didn't know he'd be that good last year as a pitcher. Goes 8 scoreless to finish things out yesterday. That guy's just a ball player. You know, just a ball player. The other ACC series of note, to an extent, Jimmer, how did Duke save its at-large hopes by pulling out a game that you did yesterday on ESPN3, avoiding a sweep at NC State? They sure looked bad the day I went to go see them on Saturday. That was ugly.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly was a big win for them. I mean, that series, I mean, they easily could have won the Friday game. They had a lead into the eighth inning.
Right. Their Cornell pitchers are both really good.
Yeah.
Kellen Urban and Brian McAfee are legitimate ACC pitchers.
Yeah, I wasn't there on Friday, but Urban looked like he was dominant. I mean, he had a rough first inning, but then he was very efficient after that. And yeah, Brian McAfee was just, I mean, it was kind of strange. I mean, he's, you know, the sinker baller, but he was getting one fly out after another yesterday, but it worked for him. But yeah, I mean, that was a big win for them. They're 10-14, 43rd in the RPI, and their schedule is not, I mean, they have, well, let's say they play Florida State, I guess, I can't remember if it's this weekend or next.
And they have exams this weekend.
Yeah, I think they're off.
Next weekend.
So their next series is Florida State when they do play it, and then they finish with Pittsburgh.
Those pesky exams. It does feel like the ACC, though, some of these, this middle is kind of shaken out there with Notre Dame with this very, very momentum-sapping doubleheader loss to Miami of Ohio.
After losing a midweek
Ohio.
Eastern Michigan.
Oh, just Ohio.
Yes.
Gotcha. Wrong
Kent
state.
Kent State beat Miami of Ohio for Coach Jeff Duncan's 100th career win, and there is your MAC update.
Thank you. I was like, can you tell who's the MAC alum in the office? but that was not good. Not a good look for the Fighting Irish.
No, they're just they went from being in to being just about completely
off the radar. Their choice is either winning the ACC tournament or getting incredibly hot, because they do have some good games here coming. They have a couple midweeks against LSU even, but they're really going to have to almost run the table.
They're
going
to have to run
this point.
And they're basically, their series at North Carolina in 2 weeks is like the loser of that series is going to be in really rough shape for making the ACC tournament. So North Carolina's going to have this very gaudy RPI and not make the ACC tournament, because they've still got Louisville and NC State sandwiched around a home series with Notre Dame. I mean, they have Louisville at home, I believe.
Yeah,
Notre Dame at home. Then at NC State.
They're going to have to come out of the finals break that they had this last weekend playing a lot better than they have been, because they have to finish strong here.
Because it feels like their RPI does not tell the story of who they are.
No.
And that's fair to say with North Carolina. They're not one of the top 15 teams in the country, no matter what the but the RPI almost feels like it's broken this year.
Yeah, we have this many teams from the two conferences. It's almost useless.
We've talked about how the West is down. We did rank another Pac-12 team this week. We didn't rank Fullerton. I get it. I don't think they have really a top 25 resume. They are leading the Big West. In the Pac-12, we did rank UW this week. So we have the Huskies in. They are in a virtual tie for first, but that's actually stretching
it.
They're half game
tied.
Back, right?
No, they.
They are. Okay.
Utah. So when you looked at it late last night, Utah had not played yet.
They lost the finale to UCLA.
Yes. Now, why that series had some very strange start times, and I'm not quite sure why Saturday's game started as early as it did and Sunday's started as late as it did, but the Pac-12 after dark was in effect last night.
Pac-12 after dark. I like that. That'll be the great name of a podcast. If it's not already,
it's not original to me, so it probably is.
But the so this league, UW at the top of the league, we think looks a little bit better than Utah at the top of the league. We ranked the Huskies. I'm still at a loss to figure out how the Huskies win so many games. It appears the number one answer, brace yourself, Teddy, maybe bunting. They far and away lead the Pac-12 in bunting. There are only two teams over 50 sacrifice bunts in the Pac-12. They're one of them. Jack Meggs, Dave Esker told Mike Lanana last week that he thought Jack Meggs could be the MVP of the league. What does he lead the league in? Bunts. He leads with 15 sacrifice bunts. This guy's like from the... It's like Augie Garrido and George Horton's love child, but he's actually Lindsey Meggs' child, playing for his dad at UW and leads the league in sacrifice bunts. I think he has 7 extra base hits all year. It's a very strange mix at Washington, guys. I'm not sure if you guys can tell me why you think Washington's winning, because I'm going to guess, Teddy, that you don't think they're winning because of their bunting.
Yeah. What they do have is a great closer. Troy Rawlins is leading the Pac-12 with 14 saves, and he got 11 outs in Sunday's series finale win at Cal. It was a 7-4 win, and Meggs went to him pretty early, and Rawlins came through. Now, he's not a typical or a prototypical closer himself. You know, we talked about that at South Carolina, and Rawlins is, again, not a prospect in that way, but he has been incredibly effective for them this year.
And then Alex Nesbitt was great for them this week. Versatile middle relief role, got the win in all three of their victories this week, which is pretty good.
I mean, they pitch well. What they do is they pitch well. And
Rawlings, by the way, just as you mentioned this, Brian Tom, their SID, had this great note in their release. 13 of his 14 saves are more than 3 outs. So he's been extended a lot this year. That is a great stat.
He has enough innings that he qualifies for the ERA title, and I believe
he's going to win because it's 0.68.
I believe he's leading the Pac-12 in ERA, and he might be leading the country. I'm not positive on that,
but it has been the bullpen.
He's having a great year.
That's a hell of a bullpen. One more stat from Brian: their bullpen in their last 18 games is 9-1 with a 1.54 ERA. So that's getting the job done for UW. Jimmer, what's Schoenerology going to say about the Pac-12 this week? Because last week we were kind of hot on Arizona. This week we're a little bit hotter on the Huskies.
Can't go and lose the series to USC. That's
TFCO.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Maybe they could be we're talking about them. It might be the host, the one team that could host.
Right.
Not so much anymore. I mean, now UW 32 in the RPI, so maybe they're the team that if they keep this momentum going and finish strong, they might could host. So we've got three teams in the top 40 of the RPI here with UW, Arizona, and Oregon State. So, and Cal's down to 49. I mean, Cal's in a bit of trouble.
A bit. I feel like Cal's not going to make the NCAA tournament. It's what it feels like.
Yeah, it's not trending that way. I mean, they're under 500 in the league now, 10-11, down to 49. I mean, It'll be close to see whether or not I have them in this week. So it might just be a three-bid league. I mean, Arizona State is actually kind of creeping into this discussion here. They're up to 500. They're 59 in the 500 in the conference. They're 59 in the RPI. They feel like they're kind of going in the right direction. They might be the one that might actually sneak in here and make this. You know, maybe they supplant Cal. I mean, they do have some momentum.
So we've been waiting all spring for this Utah run to go away, but they win another series. They beat UCLA. They close at home against Washington. Now they are still under 500 overall, well under 500.
But if they win the Pac-12,
they need to go. Yeah, they would get an auto bid.
They have to win the league outright. But they're still in position to do that.
And there's no tournament here,
right?
So
it's awesome. It's really
they
awesome.
Have to go 10-3 to finish 500. So that's probably out of reach because they have not played that kind of baseball all year. They don't have the midweek stuff to make that happen. And I suppose they could add some games. They're down some games, so they could add if they wanted to. But if that happened, Jimmer, that's a 4 seed, obviously.
Yeah, they'd have to be.
But like, what is that?
That's unprecedented. That would seem to be unprecedented.
Yeah, I can't even. It's hard to even wrap your mind around that, honestly.
It is. I had a...
Well, obviously, I mean, they're Pac-12 leader, and they just beat 8th place UCLA, so they should be expected to win that series, of course.
It was a home series.
Taking care of business.
That's really funny. I'll say a couple things there. First off, everyone I've talked to who's seen Utah respects their club, the scouts, guys I'm making draft calls to. I've also, Utah is scrappy. They just don't have a whole lot of offense. They just can't hit much. But the talent level at Utah, Bill Kinnenberg... Bill Kinnenberg did a nice job there. Jason Hawkins, his recruiting coordinator, is well-respected out there, works hard, unearthed some talent that other teams maybe didn't see that's come to fruition there. He's done a really nice job there identifying guys and taking advantage of when Utah went into the Pac-12, selling that to people, and the talent level there has certainly gone up. They're still under 500 overall is the thing. In the midweek, they just, you know, all their firepower is trained on the weekends, and it's worked.
It's like Cincinnati in the American. Yeah. To a lesser extent, they're only like a game under 500, but you know, they also have serious midweek problems, and were also, like Utah, struggled mightily at the start of the season, and yet here they are leading their conference.
They have to deal with a tournament, though, unfortunately.
They will have to deal with a tournament.
But if Utah were to win this league, it would really be, that would be one of the most fascinating stories I could ever remember in college baseball, for the Pac-12 to be won by an under 500 team. And so I wrote that column last issue, and everyone I've talked to on West Coast Draft Call since then, no matter what level these guys are at, everyone's like, yeah, you were too kind. It's brutal out here. I mean, I got that from two people this weekend. We're just like, yeah, this is not. So it's about as bad as people can remember the caliber of college baseball in the West this year. And that is, you know, and the fact that we thought it was down last year when Fullerton had to rally late to be the only team that got out of regionals from the entire West. So it feels like it's worse this year. I hope that trend stops soon, because it's just like college baseball is better when all those West Coast fans are feisty, Jim, and giving us a hard time. And all the teams get knocked off. And they're just, it's not that they're beating each other up this year. They're just not good. Yeah. They're just not good. And I don't have it in front of me, so I'll ask from a position of ignorance. I did watch some BYU this weekend. I know they wrapped up that series by beating Gonzaga. Where's that conference stand right now? And who's in the driver's seat in that league?
Oh, well, that one's still pretty. I think St. Mary's lost this weekend, if I remember right. Or I think they lost a game to San Francisco.
There's three teams.
They won that series, but that still hurts them.
Yeah, Gonzaga, BYU, and St. Mary's are all really, really close together. And you had been looking at that as a multi-year league. And
so BYU took two out of three from Gonzaga.
Right. Barely. They had to rally in the ninth to save their at-large hopes, because if they'd lost that game, I imagine they would have been done.
Yeah. So, like, right now, I mean, those three teams are still basically tied. I mean, I think they're BYU and St. Mary's are percentage points ahead of Gonzaga, who's played one more series. But the thing is, St. Mary's really hurt itself. They needed to sweep that series. They're down to 57th now, which is very borderline in the RPI.
I feel like they're going to lose their mind. I'm sorry. I have to go there. I can't help myself. And I guess the only reason that A.J. Puckett didn't pitch more innings without giving up a run, he's given up two runs in his last 51 and two-thirds for Pepperdine. But Pepperdine was off this weekend. Again, those pesky exams, so that helped preserve his streak of days, if not innings.
Speaking of exams, this is very interesting. I was in South Carolina this weekend, obviously. They had exams on Saturday. They played on Saturday. We talk about all these other schools. I mean, North Carolina, where Chad Holbrook went to school.
Yep.
Now coach at South Carolina, where his players are taking exams on the day that they play. You know, North Carolina has off for exams. So I don't know which is right, necessarily.
It's strange that the SEC, no SEC team ever seems to take the week off for exams.
No, they don't. The SEC doesn't allow that. I don't know whether they don't allow it, but no they SEC don't do team it. Has a week off ever.
I've never asked that question. See, that would be a good column. I should have written that sometime in the last 20 freaking years. You'd have thought I'd have noticed that. I'm glad that you just said that. So I've still got three days to write.
And I mean, you have teams that or schools that really are significant academic type schools that don't take these finals breaks. I don't think the Ivy League. I mean, I guess they finish before finals. That's how they avoid it. But like Northwestern, there's no finals break there. The Big Ten doesn't have finals breaks.
True that.
And, you know, Vanderbilt doesn't. There's no finals break.
I'll speak to the Ivy League briefly just to say that I talked with those two Duke Cornell transfers this weekend, and despite all of our experience with Hudson Belinsky here the last year plus at Baseball America, I was still very impressed. They represented well for Cornell, so I did not see that coming, you know. So they spoke highly of Hudson, too, if truth must be told. But, yeah, it's exam time of year, and it always amazes me how a lot of these college baseball teams plow through it and still deal with all that and still play well on the weekends, and even more surprisingly, like you said, in the SEC, where you could insert, I'm impressed, Jim, your restraint, that when he used North Carolina as the example for exams, that you did not make a joke. So kudos to Jimmer.
I heard my guy Joe Giglio was trying to do that on the over the weekend from the News and Observer here. So.
He's practiced as well at that, and we'll leave it to Joe and his Twitter feed. But yeah, it always impresses me. But once you're through exams, it's like those college baseball coaches always look at those players and go, "You're mine now. You know, you belong to me because the school's over, and it should be all baseball." Yeah. So that's where you hope that some of those teams in last year with Virginia, they really did turn it on as soon as that exam break was over, basically.
And Jake Boss mentioned that Michigan State takes exams this week. And so coming off this big series win, they get school finished up, and then they can just focus on playing ball.
Well, I'm going to focus on editing, and you guys are focused on college baseball like a laser and the draft as well. So thanks for taking the time. We hope that Mike is healthy and ready for next week's podcast. Teddy's going to go chat. You can, of course, read that at baseballamerica.com, read that transcript. So for Teddy and for Jim Schoen, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.